welcome back to part two in our interview with Dan McGrath. This episode, we learned that Dan's met practically all our heroes, and it's a lot of fun. So please enjoy our talk on the What Difference Does It Make podcast.
Well, tell us about radio growing up, because, I mean, how did you hear Starman? What was it, like two radio stations you had a choice of listening to?
In London, there was Radio 1. The Radio 1 breakfast show has been going on forever and ever and ever. It would have been somebody like Tony Blackburn or Kenny Everett. Kenny Everett was a brilliantly famous DJ, the first DJ, certainly the UK, to play Bohemian Rhapsody from start to finish on purpose, because he was mates with Freddie Mercury. And I think if you watch the Queen film, there is a scene where Freddie goes in and gives him the song and he sits and plays it. And then there was Capital Radio in London that I used to listen to, which was the commercial stations. So I'm trying to think, though. I don't know. I probably would have heard it in the house more than in my home than I would have heard it on the radio.
Yeah, you had a pretty hip house, apparently.
Yeah, my mum was great. She had really youthful taste in music, so she was very much. I was get from her. Both me and my brother were getting Hall & Oates and that kind of ilk, you know, that sort of. And then there was like Uriah Heep and all these sort of prog rocky bands and a lot of rock and Zeppelin, because my mum was in her mid 30s. And so guys in tight jeans and long corkscrew hair, she was like, yeah, look, that's great. That's a great look. So I think, yeah, I think the Bowie stuff was probably my mum. And because radio, pop, you know, pop music on the radio, as we well know, and it has been for many years, is Matt Johnson. I'll tell you a quick Matt Johnson story from The. So we interviewed him. Well, I worked on a show called The Big Breakfast, and we interviewed Matt Johnson. This was the early 90s. So The were kind of, you know, there wasn't a lot going on with The at that point. And the person that was interviewing him said to him, why do you think that you don't have any hits in the charts at the moment? You know, why do you think you struggle to have like top 10 hits? And he said, because I don't write novelty records. And I think that, for me, that really summed it up. The charts, and I love pop music. I think pop music's fantastic. And when you think somebody's done it and torn the arse out of a genre or a style, somebody comes up with a new track, a new pop track, and you go, that's brilliant. It's like Calvin Harris is really good at it, or whoever. Mm-hmm. Where they're not doing anything wild and wacky, but they just nail it again and again and again. And so that, I think, you know, the pop thing, I'm going off on a tangent now. I've completely forgotten why I got to this point. But radio, really, pop radio, which is probably what I was listening to, was Starman a pop record? It probably was, wasn't it? Was it a pop record? I mean,
I don't think so.
No,
not
okay.
Here.
So it would have been. It would have been a chart. It would have charted. Mm-hmm. The joy of the '70s, the late '70s, and again, if we're going to extol the virtue of the '80s, is it was the last great era of songwriting. You know, the '90s, there was some great stuff in the '90s, and I was on the radio in the '90s, and we enjoyed the Britpop explosion in the UK. But as Gary Langan, who mixed all the stuff with Trevor Horn, you know, the Lexicon of Love and all that, said, the noise was a fucking vacuum, Dan. You know, and it was like, so the '70s, you know, to think of Starman as a pop record doesn't make any sense anymore, does it? Because it's not a pop record. It's an absolute iconic bit of music. But it was a pop song. And lots of Bowie stuff was. It was very jingly jangly and poppy, and hey, I'm on the radio. It was all that loveliness, wasn't it?
Well, it wasn't.
Bowie, we would not have heard it on KHJ. We would not have heard it.
No, I mean, Bowie didn't, for us, Bowie didn't hit until Let's Dance, really.
Right, okay.
I mean, we listened to the alternative radio. They played a lot of Bowie there, and he got a little bit of play on FM radio.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Suffragette City and Changes, those songs got played.
Heroes gets played.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true. He did Fame. Fame made it into the top 10.
But this was never pop. This was never pop radio. It was only on album
indie
rock
stuff.
Yeah.
So Let's Dance was
his reach for that's it. I'm making a pop record.
Yeah, and it was a relaunch for him as well, I think, in the
it was a
chrysalis coming out of the chrysalis and a rebloom for him as well in the UK, because all of a sudden we all went, this is all very shiny and poppy, isn't it?
You know, I had a hard time reconciling that, you know, with Modern Love with you know, Heroes and Changes.
I loved it.
But it didn't, you know, it was different. It was a departure.
Yeah, it was exciting for me. Yeah. That was the first concert I went to with my friends, with no parents. It was a
serious Moonlight Tour.
It was at a stadium. It was the Go-Go's and Madness were also opening up.
Yeah.
So it was a great
what
great
year?
Fun. was 83.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
August of 83.
Yeah. We went to Milton Keynes, which is one of those new towns they built back in the late 70s, early 80s, or whenever it was. So we schlepped all the way to Milton Keynes to see him. And it was, again, it was that iconic thing of him in that blue suit with the big shock of blonde hair on his face. Like, look at him. He's so cool.
Yeah, it was still amazing. Yeah. Loved it. Did you ever meet Gary Newman, or is that...
I've met Gary Newman a few times. Again, he's one of those people that when I say hello to him, because I've been introduced to him by friends of his. Mm-hmm. So I'll end up getting backstage, and again, I'm like really nervous because I think he's so cool. And I go, hi, Dan. And he's like that. Zeb's mate. Oh, hi. You know, it's that kind of thing. So I get a bit of vicarious, like I know him, but I don't really know him. Mm-hmm. But I have met him. He's just very, very lovely. Very low key. You know, has publicly said he has Asperger's and all that kind of stuff. Painfully shy. Mm-hmm. But a very lovely bloke. And again, if I've ever found myself in a situation with people like that where you end up just talking about fairly nonchalant stuff, it's like my dad always said about knowing languages. When you know a language to the point where you just have a conversation, you're not ordering a beer or getting a loaf of bread, that's when it really makes sense. Mm-hmm. It's in there. And so when you're hanging out with somebody you really admire and you're just going, yeah, so last Friday I was just blah, blah, blah. And you think, what am I doing? I'm having a normal conversation with this person who I should just be going, you're really great. Mm.
I do remember seeing him on the first time I saw Gary Newman was on Saturday Night Live.
Okay.
They put him on. I have no idea. I mean, they had
that
like
was for Cars.
Yeah, right? Yeah. They played Cars. Yeah. And I'm like, I have never seen anything like that. I mean, I was 12 or something, whatever it was, but it was like nothing I'd seen before. And so, I mean, through that, that's how I kind of went down the Gary Newman hole of like, oh my God, what is this guy about? Amazing.
Yeah.
He still is.
There's a great thing called Synth Britannia, it's about like a 3-part series in the UK. You probably get it on YouTube. Called Synth Britannia, which is all about that, and they have like Andy McCluskey and Martin Ware, and so the other guys that were trying to have hits at the time, all roundly saying when Newman appeared on Top of the Pops, which was the big Thursday night, pop show in the UK, when he appeared on Top of the Pops singing, was it Our Friends Electric? I think it was Cars. They all went, oh shit, he's done it. He's made it. He's made a pop song that's gone on to that show. Because around that time, it was very much guitar bands. It was like, you know, it was rock. And so they all, you know, Andy McCluskey went, oh fuck, he's beaten us to it. But what he did do is he opened the floodgates for all those, for those electronic bands.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, when I first heard that, I was like, what is, didn't know. Is this pop? Is this something?
And he said, right. You know, when he went to write, when he did that Tube Army album, he went into his record label, said, go and do your album. And he was going to do a punk album. That's what he was going to do. It was all guitars. And the famous story he always tells in every interview is there was a Moog lent up against the wall and they plugged it in and it made this noise. And he went, oh, that's kind of cool. Let's put that all over everything. And he said he delivered the album. And the label went, what have you done? This is not what we wanted. And he went, I don't know, but I think this is going to be, you know, put it out. And we'll put it out, you know, and he was right.
I want to know about some of your, we would like to know about some of your other synth pop heroes.
It's one of those things, when you say it, then you start trying to think of them all. I mean, me and my mates got into things like Cabaret Voltaire and all these very, very experimental electronic bands that then bled into, you know, Vince Clarke, obviously, Vince Clarke for me was, I tell you my Vince Clarke. here's my Depeche Mode story, my Vince Clarke story. When I was in school... It was 81, I'm trying to think, I was about 13 years old in the third or fourth year maybe, and in my school in Richmond, which is in South London, and there was a gaggle of us that were into synth, into electronica, and our English teacher during one of the lessons said, has anybody here heard of a band called Depeche Mode? And so a bunch of us went, yes, sir, I do. I know them. He said, well, my sister's going out with somebody in that band called Martin. So, of course, we're like, what? So do you think I should try and get them to come to the school and play? Oh, yeah. We were like, are you kidding? Anyway, we're going to need roadies. Who wants to do that? So me and my mate Ben, and we're putting our hands up. Can't put your hands up any higher, you know. And we, okay, you and you. So... one lunchtime, one Wednesday, I can't remember what it is, and it took years later, somebody had posted all these photos up, you know, once the internet kicked in. This transit van arrived, this, you know, panel van, and out got Depeche Mode, Dave Gahan wearing those kind of real 80s sort of aviators, but they were graduated, so they got lighter. I distinctly remember it. Anyway, they arrived. Daniel Miller from Mute Records came because he was their manager at the time, and they ended up putting on our blazers, you know, our uniform, and taking photos of that. So we're all getting our lunch in the dinner hall, wandering down the thing, getting our potatoes, and through the wall we can just hear as they're running the tapes and getting all the music up. And Depeche Mode did a gig in our school, and the headmaster said, right, you're allowed to take your ties off. That was it. That was all they were allowed
That's
to
amazing.
Do. You can take your ties off and you can go and watch Depeche Mode. And we watched this Depeche Mode gig in our, because they were jobbing, they were going around the country, you know, promoting themselves and trying to get kids into it, like One Direction do, and all the Spice Girls all did it, you know. And so we watched Depeche Mode. And I remember Vince Clarke, obviously, was still with them at this point. And I just thought, he's so cool, because he's written all this stuff. And I think Speak and Spell had come out, so we were all starting to listen to that. Vince Clarke had a Roland JP4 for the synth fans out there. Vince Clarke had a Roland JP4. Martin Gore had a Korg MS-20. And Andy Fletcher had a Moog Source. And if you're into synths, look up the Moog, or you want to be into synths, or whatever. The Moog Source is a bit like a really cool guitar. You can put it on your wall because it's a synth that's like orange and blue, and it's got a big spacey knob on it, and it's got, it's silver. And so, like, if you find a great Strat and you put that on your wall, if you want to put a synth on your wall, the Moog Source is the one for me. Anyway, so my heroes. So Vince Clarke, without doubt, because what did he do? He left Depeche Mode early. What are you doing? What a nightmare. And then he forms Yazoo, or Yaz as they were called out here. Mm-hmm. He did Erasure again, you know, just kept on nailing it, just kept on nailing it. I love him for that. And then, I mean, all those bands, Human League and Eurythmics as well. Eurythmics was cool because Dave Stewart did that kind of thing. He was slightly more kind of highbrow, I think. But again, anything that was electronic like that, you know, I just, Pet Shop Boys, I mean, you know, West End Girls, the greatest 80s song ever, I think, when you hear that synth pad. So I don't know, I could keep on going. That sort of style of music, it was all very kind of girly and a bit fey, but I loved it.
All right.
So, we're talking, the title of this podcast is based on a Smiths track, and I wasn't really listening to the Smiths. And of course, it wasn't until years later that I got into the Smiths and went, oh, they're so great. And of course, you know, the songs that, once I discovered that sort of stuff and calmed down and not wanted to hear synthetics, then I'd start listening to people like the Smiths and stuff like that.
All right. So, all artists rip off each other. What have you taken from Vince Clarke and put onto your own music? Maybe you hide it in there somehow. I'm sure there's like a little riff that's like, oh my God, I lifted this directly, because I know you did. Don't deny it.
I haven't released, I don't write songs.
I'm sure you've created some music where it's
I write with a guy called Josh Phillips, and Josh is a phenomenal musician, but a great keyboard player, great Hammond organ player, and has played with a band called Procol Harum for about the last 20 years. And so,
I don't know. I don't know any keyboards. Did they have something in their song?
You know, there's maybe some keyboard lines that somebody in the world could find that Procol Harum did. Well. So Josh is one of the, when they go and tour, he's the one that has to play that famous keyboard line. But the point with Josh is that he's about 6 or 7 years older than me. So I bring all my 80s electronica sensibilities to the room, and he tries to stop me from doing that. And he brings all his kind of prog rocky, widdly widdly keyboards or kind of the Who. I mean, hey, don't get me wrong, the Who are great. But so he'll play the guitar and it'll sound like the Who, or it'll sound like, you know, that kind of world. And so I'm always trying to get the synths on and get some kind of synth sound in there. So that's kind of the joke, is while we're doing stuff, he's like, go on, switch on the Moog, switch it on, put something in there that's, you know, electronic.
It's a courtesy.
And and I'll try and hide something in there. But I've never nicked anything off anybody. It's all brand new, because these days of the litigious, terrible lawyers killing the industry by just suing everybody for sounding like somebody. I mean, that's a whole other podcast we should do about that. But, you know, Ed Sheeran now has to just go, I'm not influenced by anybody. I've never listened to anything else, because otherwise I'm in court.
All right, this is a good time to take a break.
This seems like a great time to take a break.
Pantheon Podcast listeners, Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house. And my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once, new quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode, available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Welcome back to the What Difference Does It Make podcast. Somebody you've neglected to mention, Thomas Dolby.
Oh, God. Of course. It's just the red light syndrome. I can't think. Love Thomas Dolby. One of the most underrated songwriters, ever. And I'll tell you why I love Thomas Dolby. He started One of Our Submarines is one of those songs when you listen to it that he put sound effects into as well as the song, and I loved that notion of putting in real world sounds into songs. And you know, when you listen to the Flat Earth and probably the Flat Earth mainly, that album, there's all the kind of lovely crickets and frogs when he's talking about the bayou or whatever it might be, and he just rolls these sound effects in and they take you away. And I love Thomas Dolby, and I have met him a couple of times, and I was a terrible fanboy when I first met him. We interviewed him for a podcast we did for this 80s radio station, and I just think it was probably the worst interview I'd ever done with anybody, because I just looked at him and go, it's Thomas Dolby, you know. And I probably asked him questions that were far too nerdy, but yeah, love him because, and also he's one of those people that if you try and level at him the whole kind of electronica thing, he'll bulk against it because he's a songwriter. He'll say, I'm a songwriter and I write songs, and yeah, I use synths, but you know, that's because they were lying about, or I had shitloads of money, I could buy a Fairlight and I could sample and all that. And the same with, we interviewed Trevor Horn, and you know, and the whole notion of the interview was about technology and music. And I don't know, Trevor Horn. So here's the story about Trevor Horn. Right? So Trevor Horn, we interview him, right? And he's really, really mardy. He's not into it. He's not interested, right? And I'm saying, so Trevor, you know, tell us all about the technology you used in when you're doing Owner of a Lonely Heart or you know, the Frankie albums or The Art of Noise, you know. And he's like, and all that was played by people. There was, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, yeah, but you know, you had lots of money, so you bought a Synclavier and you sampled bass sounds. Yeah, but then we got human beings to play that. So we interviewed him, and it was an awful, awful. He warmed up eventually, and we got an interview out of him. And me and my mate Nick was stood on this platform at this station, going, "Oh my God, never meet your heroes." That was the hardest thing ever. Yeah. So we then interviewed these other guys from a company called Avid that make this software called Pro Tools, and Pro Tools is a very, very successful audio editing software. And this guy Ben from Avid went, "Hey, what you been doing?" We said, "We've just interviewed Trevor Horn," and he went, "Oh, really?" We said, "Yeah, why do you say it like that?" And he said, "Well, it's only 11:30. Why did you interview him now?" And we went, "Why, is that a thing?" He said, "Oh, yeah, you should only ever interview Trevor Horn after kind of nearer lunchtime, because up until that point, he hasn't had his Diet Coke and his spliff. Once he's had that, he's fantastic." Anyway, so, and Trevor Horn, same sort of thing, like Thomas Dolby. If you try and sort of say to him, "Hey, you're like electronica, man," they're like, "No, I'm not. I'm a songwriter, or I'm a musician." And that was just the tools we had at the time, you know.
That's another perspective.
Yeah, there you go. Which it was, you know, if you watch Synth Britannia, Andy McCluskey from OMD, so he said, you know, when we started writing all our songs and having hits, mm-hmm. the Cognoscenti, the NME and Musical Express and all those British press went, yeah, but you know, that's all like, it's electronic and you've got that keyboard where you just press a button and the hit song comes out. Yeah. And Andy McCluskey said, do you not think if we had a synthesizer with a button on it that had, you hit it and it made a hit, we would all have bought it and just be pressing it 100 times. These are songs, we wrote songs, right. You know, yeah. They were great songs, but they were electronic songs.
All right. You want to get your book out, or what? Okay. What do you?
I feel like we haven't even scratched the surface.
Well, we haven't, but you know,
we've got a whole decade to do.
I know.
I understand.
See, could have just picked a year. But so at the end of every episode, we do this trivia.
What quiz?
This 80s trivia. Yeah, oh, it started with this
because you've listened to every episode.
Rock
right?
and roll.
You know what's going on here.
So we switch off asking each other the questions, see how many we get right, and it's not just, you know, synth and new wave, but we're going to ask you.
Is that a U.S. book?
This is the U.S. book. So
yeah,
we'll
so
see.
I'm screwed, really, because you're going to start saying some weird bands that I've never heard
no,
of.
No, I don't think so. Well...
Tears of Fears. Tears of Fears, that's the other ones we need to mention, obviously.
We didn't even
every time I remember these bands, I just shout them out.
I know.
Actually,
like a savant.
You were growing up at the time. We interviewed Trevor Steele from the Escape Club.
Okay.
Who had the song Wild Wild West.
Which
and
we
you're
know.
And you're looking at it like, I don't know that
I
song.
I don't know that. I would have played
He was... He's Britain. He's British. He's the only British artist to not chart on the British charts. It was it was number one in America.
Really,
yeah. Wild Wild West, number one in America. Didn't do anything in
Wang Chung were the other ones. Wang Chung did really well over here, didn't they? Back in the '80s.
Oh yeah,
didn't
yeah.
really do. I mean, they were okay in the UK, but not really much.
I don't know because he was talking. Yeah, he in our interview he was talking about like he's playing the big crowds in England in his hometown. And he found out he was actually at a pub in somewhere in England enjoying a pint, and he got a phone call, and they told him he's number one in America.
No way. Wow.
And he was by himself, or, you know, it was like with some friends. Like
sharing the news with the bartender.
Yeah. He went, screw you, UK, I'm gone.
Yeah, I know. And it wasn't until he came into America, it's like, this is a big deal.
Wow.
Yeah.
That must be so weird, mustn't it?
They are now. He's on an 80s tour. The band is on, you know, is the he? 80s tour that yeah, are yeah, that yeah, yeah. multiple bands on a bill.
Yeah. I heard you mention that because that's one of you. That was one of your sponsors or something. I heard you say that.
Oh, the 80s
Tony
cruise.
Hadley and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, the cruise. Yeah, yeah.
You listen to our spot.
Oh, yeah.
But they're going to play
it out
Escape
the cruise,
Club.
By the way.
Yeah.
sold,
we sold it
sold
out.
It out.
Yeah. Oh, they said, you don't need to do it anymore.
You sold it out.
Yeah.
He's going to be playing there. He said he thinks they'll come back and do some shows in London. So
is that song going to be on the Spotify playlist? Because I will have a listen to it and then
I'll play it for you right after this. I'll email you and go,
of course I knew that song.
Yeah, so I already know by looking at these that you're probably going to get the answer to most of them.
Really?
Would you like to
you
ask
sure?
him or would I?
Sure?
Or,
Holly says this all the time. Holly is a much better reader than I am. So we'll let her. She's right. a lovely hostess.
Yeah,
these is there going to be a jingle for this or not?
Yeah,
we just send you.
Would
one?
You like to make one?
Yes. Oh, dude, we need like transition type music. We got to get
trivia.
and you could make it as you could rip off things as much as you like.
Weren't you the one who said one of your musician friends? You know, pay him $100.
What's the music? There's the music. Is that a band?
Someone
you
made
know?
It for us.
Okay, yeah.
A friend of Dave's, an American.
Well, we need
I'll go back and do some electro, something like proper urban electro, something like that from the really early 80s, Afrika Bambaataa type stuff. That's what we need.
You're bordering on famous, so I think that's going to cost us a lot of money that we don't have.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about rights and that kind of thing.
That's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, so there are 10 questions.
Oh my God.
And they're all multiple choice.
They've just said half an hour maximum.
You have 30 seconds to answer.
They're multiple choice, but some of these...
Oh, good. Okay, good.
You will for sure be able to answer some of them.
We need a bell or something.
But at least I can give an answer because you're going to give me some options.
I'm going to give you options, but the ones that you know off the bat, I'm not even going to give you the options. You can just yell it out.
All right.
Like this one. Who had success with the song Fascination in 1983?
Fascination. Oh, Baloui Sum. No, that's Imagination, isn't it? Fascination. Oh, it's Human League, isn't it?
There you go.
Yeah, sorry. Keep feeling fascination. Shall I not sing? If I sing, does that stop? Does it get taken down?
No, you're fine. You're showing your UK like roots with this.
You almost
answer.
Lost all credibility by not
sorry,
being able to answer
sorry,
that.
Sorry. It's on the spot now. That's horrible.
I know.
I have no idea.
Same ilk, cut from the same cloth. Well, not really, but okay.
Keep going.
In which year did Cyndi Lauper release the song Girls Just Want to Have Fun? Do you want the multiple
85.
Choice?
85.
Close.
81, 83, or 85?
85.
83.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Should I throw out hints for him?
When, yes.
When did you? Yeah. What, wait. What? Yes. What's
this
it called?
I'm going to fall fat on my face with this.
This isn't. You're. It's not high school. What's it called when you're, you know, 14 through 18? What do you call your school that you're in?
You call it
secondary school. School, yeah.
Secondary,
yeah,
school. Yeah, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Is it freshman, sophomore, junior, senior?
So
is like
from
that?
From like 11. Hang on. When?
Okay.
From
so like let's say.
Secondary school is from 11 to 16. That's secondary school.
Oh, really?
Primary school is prior to that.
At 17, what happens after 16?
Then
you're done?
Then you go to sixth form. It's called sixth form college, and you do 2 years. You do your A-levels, or now they're called ASs or something in the UK. And then after that, you go to university.
Right.
So you're still 18, but you're doing 2 years of
completely
post.
Lost.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just have like middle and high school.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, you guys.
That's all our brains
simple.
Can handle.
Yeah, we can't handle it.
Yeah, you keep it simple. We don't.
Okay, moving
We're only
on.
Two questions in.
Where am I? yes, some of these. Sorry. Looking ahead.
Oh, God.
Which song by Madonna begins with the phrase, "I made it through the wilderness, somehow I made it through"?
See, so when you say things like you can't remember the.
I know. She's going to sing it all.
She does the same
thing. When you get to the chorus.
Oh, my God. Which is.
And then the chorus is.
Bum, bum, bum.
Like a virgin.
There we go.
Very good.
I knew
this
the bump, bump, bumps would work.
Yeah.
All right. Who had a hit in 1986 with the song "Living on a Prayer"?
Bon Jovi.
Very good.
Oh, you know Bon Jovi.
I met him. I met John Bon Jovi.
Yeah.
He
signed my guitar. I have a signed guitar at home from John Bon Jovi. Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, how'd you get him to sign?
He's very small. Anyway, move on.
They're all small.
Yes. Yeah, they are, aren't they? He's tiny.
Yeah.
They're all small. Oh, those rock stars.
They're all small.
Okay. You didn't tell us your Bon Jovi. I guess we weren't focused on.
Don't go big on Bon Jovi.
No, we're going to lose. Our listeners are dropping off. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Which album by the band Survivor was released in 1982?
Eye of the Tiger. Is it called that?
Very good.
It was?
Okay. Yeah.
It was the name of the band. Of the album.
Yeah. Okay. You're good.
Okay, a title song.
Very good. In which did Phil Collins release the song Another Day in Paradise?
Wait. Which year?
They ask a lot of your questions.
Yeah. I know, I don't like that.
See, if you're a radio person, you don't ask questions round that way. You say, in 1987, what did Phil Collins release? Then you get some interesting answers.
I agree. But well, we're just looking for an A, B, or C.
Oh, okay. So which year did he release Another Day in Paradise? So that would have been like late 80s or mid to late 80s, wouldn't it? Yeah. It would have been like 87.
So let's see.
What's the choices?
Your choices are 85, 87, 89.
I'm going to say 87.
It's 89.
Is it really?
Yes,
it's nearly 90s.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Again, Phil Collins, desperately naff, but brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, brilliant he was. Some of those albums, the No Jacket Required and all that, brilliant albums.
Yeah, they are. I agree. Not my personal favorites.
No, I'm with you. I think he's really naff, and I think, you know, there was a cheesy element to it, but he's good.
I'm going to stop. What is naff?
This is
we're in America now. You gotta talk English.
If it's naff, it's like oh man, that's really interesting. How do I define naff? It's slightly uncool. It's a bit uncool. Yeah. You know, it's like it's a bit of a naff album. I'm sure I should.
How do you spell it? Is that like
dorky?
A
N A double F? I guess not N A P H.
Oh, K-N-A-P-H.
Sounds like a soup or something like that.
Yeah,
it's uncool. It's slightly uncool, and really you don't want to be part of it.
Naff.
Yeah.
You have to use it right, though. I'm going to call you out.
Yeah. Well, you will do.
You know, he was probably a guilty pleasure for people. So you know that kind of.
He was legit for
me. People took him seriously. Yeah.
No, I listen.
I remember first hearing it. Like, oh, this is great. I love this. And then you know, suddenly he's uncool. And then you know, as years go by, like you know what, these songs are amazing.
They're brilliant.
You can't deny them.
A great jazz drummer, apparently as well. Phil Collins. Yeah, really good jazz drummer.
Go ahead.
Okay, next.
Keep it coming.
Who released this on Caribbean Queen in 1984?
Caribbean Queen.
Oh, he knows this one.
Billy Ocean.
Fucking knows everything.
Good job.
Haven't met him.
Very good. Oh, well, let's see. How about this one? Who released the song No More Lonely Nights in 1984?
That's No More Lonely Nights. Oh, crikey. Oh,
well,
man.
I can give you choices.
Give me choices. Yeah, yeah.
Paul McCartney, John Lennon, George Harrison.
Not Paul McCartney. Yeah. Sorry, isn't that weird that you forget a Beatle putting a song
I know.
That's so weird. He gets a bad rap, Paul McCartney. He, you know, obviously not for the Beatles and all that. But I like things like Wonderful Christmas Time. I think that's a great, great song. Really? When that comes on, it's Christmas. I hated Mull of Kintyre, But then what else did he do? The Frog Chorus was pretty awful as well, but you know.
The what?
The Frog. Oh, see, these are songs that probably didn't make it over the pond. Hmm. He did a song called The Mull of Kintyre.
What is that? That's to the tune of what?
Mull of Kintyre.
Yeah, no, I do know the song, but it was like a Scottish thing. Yeah.
Huge hit. Yeah. Huge hit.
What was the other one that you mentioned after that?
The Frog Chorus. You don't know the Frog Chorus?
Uh-uh.
You'd have to look it up, but get it on Spotify.
Playlist.
Yeah,
there's playlist. Yeah. Put it at the end.
You listen to it and you go, a Beatle did this.
Yeah. No, I can't. No, don't put it on.
I don't.
I met George Harrison.
Oh, see, that's cool.
I met George Harrison.
You did?
Yeah, do you want to crack
What do you say to George Harrison?
I was very, very young. I was only about 8 or 9 years old.
Do you ask him if he knows Gary Numan?
No. Gary Numan was nothing to me. David Bowie was only just something to me. Yeah, I met him on the set of a movie. I was in a film. There's a film called The Ruttles, which is like
I know that.
Okay, so it's a spoof.
Have you met Monty Python? Like the whole troupe?
Well, my father worked with all those people, so that's a whole other podcast.
Let's get your. There we go.
So if you watch The Ruttles, they do a Mickey take. All You Need Is Love, but it's called Love Life. You know,
first of all, you have what is a piss take and what is a Mickey take?
Okay, so if you take the piss or you take the mick, you know, you're taking a piss. You're aping it. Ridiculing it is probably the right word. And so in that scene, they do this song that's called Love Life, and it's the whole All You Need Is Love thing with Neil Innes and Eric Idle and the other, with all the petals and the whole thing and all the girls and my sister and I are in it because my father's second wife was the art director on it, and they went, come down and we need bodies. There's a little kid in a red sweatshirt sat cross-legged at the front. That's me, sort of swaying from side to side.
Oh my god.
And my dad said, this is George, this is my son Dan, and I shook his hand. I remember he had this massive shock of corkscrew hair, because at the time I think he had that film company, whatever, that was putting the money in to make the Ruttles, because they were all mates. So that was my George Harrison moment.
That's what George loved. He just wanted to see these movies. I think like that's how Meaning of Life came out.
Yes, exactly.
No, he couldn't get financing for Monty Python couldn't. They gave it to George Harrison.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like, I'll pay for
that's
it.
That's right.
And they asked him why did you pay for this? He's like, I wanted to see the movie.
Yeah, that's so, exactly. So how lovely.
What else am I supposed to do with my money?
Yeah, he spent like $10 million just to see a movie.
That's right. Handmade films, I think they were called, weren't they?
That's good use of your...
No, it's brilliant. I wanted to see the film.
Yeah.
I still got 18 months for them to make it. Where it's like, you know.
Can we finish the quiz? Sorry, no. Okay, so we got No More Lonely Nights. Okay, we're pretty Madonna heavy on this one. What year did Madonna release her third album, True Blue? 84, 86, 88.
I was going to say sort of 86, 85, 86, 86. Very
good. You're really good at this.
You gave me some choices.
Okay, last one. Who released the song Dress You Up in 1985?
Madonna. It's all about Madonna. That.
I know.
The Madonna page.
It was. Yeah, it wasn't. It was just quiz four.
There you go.
Yeah.
Soft Cell. Hey, Soft Cell. That's another great synth duo.
Oh, yes.
Why were there so many duos? This is the other thing.
Yeah.
For us,
that's
there
true.
Were loads of duos, weren't they? That was the thing. One guy behind the keyboards and somebody singing. That was that became a real kind of template and a very successful template.
It worked.
Well, you know, they weren't Hall & Oates, but you know, who can? Who can be?
Who can be? Love Hall & Oates. Yeah. All that stuff's making a big kind of resurgence. I mean, it's not like they ever went away, but
yeah, the kids know it now too. Remember Chelsea was saying
Oh yeah.
And my kids are the same. They're starting to.
How old are your kids?
My boys are 17 and nearly 21, and one of them's DJing, and so he's finding stuff like Hall & Oates and Earth, Wind & Fire and all those acts, all that kind of stuff, because they get bored and they go, there must be something else to listen to, and then they find Stevie Wonder, you know.
Do you still have your vinyl?
I do have my vinyl, but I set up a deck and speakers in the house, and I got a terrible deck. It's really, really bad. And I put on an album, and it sounded shocking. And I thought, this is awful. And so I just went back to the Sonos. I'm sorry. I was streaming for the Sonos. And I was like, this is, you know, just simpler and easier. And one day I'll set it up correctly with a good deck. But you have to buy a good deck and a good preamp. And everyone has to stand still. And don't move around.
It's a lot of work.
And if you turn it up too loud, the sub bass comes through, you know. And you go, this is an awful format. Vinyl is a terrible, terrible format.
Hence the move forward into.
I don't know about that. Well, do you find it to be, well, you haven't, obviously you don't have the right setup, but it's like you don't find it warmer, or just kind of, as Neil Young has famously said, like he's still trying to find the right format to make his music sound proper.
Is he really?
Yeah.
As a sound engineer, I always figure that I'm thinking that CD was probably the best format so far.
Neil Young hates CD.
He hated it, sure. But if you're, I mean, the trouble with vinyl is you've got a diamond being squeezed by some plastic with fluff and stuff in there getting caught up. So you've got to have this thing straddling over the front. And then everybody, you know, you've got to make sure it doesn't jump around. The mastering engineers, when they were given the lovely, lovely, beautiful tapes by Supertramp or whoever it might have been, Pink Floyd, you know, then had to roll all the bottom off so that the needle didn't skip, and they had to kind of master it for vinyl. And then also, as the needle gets to the middle of the record, it degrades in quality because it's spinning slower. So the best tracks were put on the outside. So there's all these things about vinyl that are terrible, whereas CD, that was just an unexpurgated version of the two track that came out of the studio. It was, you know, it's 16-bit, 44.1, not compressed. You could skip the tracks.
It's
you could throw it down
sound.
And pick it up, and it wouldn't sound any worse because it didn't get degraded. So,
and what about streaming now? Like, if you do you subscribe to Spotify or Apple, or do you listen to music that through that?
I do. You know,
and what is that?
I shouldn't, as a creator, I shouldn't be listening to Spotify or whatever the arguments are. It's just so convenient, isn't it? And the discovery, I mean, that's the point of all this stuff these days.
But sound from a music production
standpoint. I don't have a Tidal account. I didn't get into all that kind of, you know, uncompressed WAV stuff that came out. I've got Spotify. My kids insist on having that ability to find anything they want to find whenever they do. Weirdly, I probably just keep listening to Depeche Mode on Spotify, you know. But, you know,
I think you do.
Yeah, I probably do. But, you know, the old days, you had to go to the shop and say to the guy, what do you recommend? And he just, so, you know, the algorithm side of it is kind of cool. And, you know, just found that Sam Fender album recently. Have you listened to this guy? This kid called Sam Fender. He's a country guy, right? No. He's a Geordie, so he's from where Sting comes from. He's from part of the UK. And he's done this album. Somebody gave him Born to Run when he's now 23, 24. Somebody gave him Born to Run when he was like 16 or something. And he's just gone, oh my God, that's what I want to do. So he's done this album. It's called Hypersonic Missiles, and I urge you to listen to it. And it's like Springsteen and Jeff Buckley have had a love child, and it's this brilliant, brilliant young kid, you know, so the soul, because he's young and all that great soul comes out of this 20-something body, but it's got big sax solos and glockenspiels and stuff, so it spins off into this sort of Springsteen-esque sound, or it's like The Killers or something like that. Okay. And he's like number one album at the moment in the UK, doing really well, Sam Fender. Yeah.
I know, that's what you're going to be listening to on the way home.
Yeah, we could do that now.
Yeah.
Although, do you go to Amoeba? Have you ever, have you been to Amoeba Music?
Record store down the street?
No.
Oh.
Do I need to go down there?
Yeah, we might have to do that after this podcast.
Okay, yeah, sounds good.
Take a field trip there. Yeah. your head will explode.
Do you know what Dave gave me for my birthday this year?
What?
He gave me a Yaz album. It was a Record Day special, right? It was a Record Day exclusive.
Right. Record store.
You're talking Yazoo, obviously, for my part.
I'm talking about Yazoo. Yeah.
Which album?
It's my favorite. It was specifically.
Was it the live record or was it the?
It's live.
Yeah.
But was it a special pressing or was it a special? Did they compile this for Record Store Day?
I'm sure it was just special, and there's only one of a kind, and you have that.
It is special.
Where was it recorded live? Do you know?
Okay.
You know what?
You can't ask me questions.
Is it a London gig?
Yes, I believe so.
I'm saying yes.
I'm on that. Me and my mate Chris Payne, when we were at art school together, because we were art school kids. I'm sorry, yeah. We went to that. It was at Hammersmith Odeon, I think.
Okay, I'm gonna look. I'll look.
And
as soon as
halfway
I get home.
Through, what's that big slow number they do? Halfway through one of the really slow numbers, I go like this. I do that. If you listen to it's like Winter Kills or one of those tracks,
okay,
and it goes really quiet and you hear this whistle and it's me. So when you're listening to that
album, oh my
hear,
god,
that's
okay.
me. It was because then they went, oh, that we've been recording this or whatever, you know.
Cheers, we'd like to slow it down now. It's pretty gentle with us. You should come up here then, mate. This is called Winter Kills.
It was, I don't know, it was one of those kind of mid-80s gigs that they did. And we thought, let's make a noise in a quiet bit, because we were idiots.
You were those idiots. Yeah. I hate you guys.
Yeah, sorry. But we were young and full of beans.
It's quiet. We can't fill up this somehow.
Yeah, exactly. But we might be on the recording, so.
Nice. All right. Let's wrap this up.
All right. Hey.
Thank you so much for coming
Dan,
out.
Dan, thank you. It was so nice to have you.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
Will you come back every time you visit LA? Will you come back and talk to us more?
I would love to. I would absolutely love to if you have me back.
We'll have you back. I don't think you'll ever run out of stories.
Thank you.
All right. Well, until next time, this is Dave.
This is Holly.
Check you later.
Over and out.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.